Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you to death, man. Shout out, special thanks to our buddies at Crossover. This is a great product. I love it. I use it. I encourage you to use it too. Podcast today is our second podcast with Coach Joe Amplo. He's really done a great job at Marquette. Big East Conference Championship, one of the top head coaches, I think, in Division I these days. In just five seasons, man, what they've done at Marquette is kind of mind-blowing. He's a former Team USA assistant coach, NCAA Division I men's lacrosse committee. Just done a great, great job. Previously, he was an assistant at Hofstra and Penn. Hofstra under Coach Donowski. I love the way he looks at the game and the way he looks at practice. Clearly took from Donowski the teaching foundation, 90-minute practices, do the simple things better, shock coaching. A lot of stuff in this podcast. I think in the article I'll focus on the 5v5, but I've learned so much, and he really, really makes me think. Again, love you, love Crossover. Without further ado, here's this great coach, Coach Joe Amplo from Marquette.
Hey, 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 that's Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Coach Joe, how you like the radio voice? Pretty cool, huh?
I love it. I love the scratchiness, man.
Sounds yeah, good. This is... You know what? Some guys, you just can't pull the wool over their eyes. We got one of those on the air with us today. Hey, man, you just listened to his intro and stuff. I edit that on ahead of time, Coach. But we had him in 2015. It was a huge hit. Coach, you may not be aware of this, but like every December, you know, I don't want to bother coaches, so we run like our top 10 articles and podcasts from the previous year. And ever since 2015, the cone of silence has been like in the top 10.
I love
even
it.
Though
I
it was
love
2 years
so,
ago.
So I won't talk about that one today.
I got some questions on some of the other ones too.
Yeah, that's credit to Coach Donowski for sure. So that's his drill.
Well, and that's, interesting. I'm sorry. Listeners, on the air with us, we got Coach Joe Amplo from Marquette. We should tell them who you are, man, in case they didn't read the bio on the page before they clicked on the podcast. You know, that was kind of interesting when I went back and listened to that again, because we just had Coach on not that long ago, maybe 6 months or 5 months, and I think he had reduced the amount of those. You know, on my site, we call them crunch drills, you know, where you have the area reduced. I thought he was going more for a spacing look. It was really interesting.
He's got bigger, faster athletes than I do. We need to play in small space. We can't play in big space. We're too slow.
Yeah. Based on your record, I think your athletes are doing just fine, man. I think your athletes are doing just fine. Anyway, Coach, thanks for coming back. Man, I know you got a million things going on, and I just really, really, really appreciate it. I'm always taken, and I've actually quoted you, believe it or not, in some of the clinics I do, not on my material, but on the material we've learned on the website. You know, there's a couple things that you definitely took away from your apprenticeship with Seth Tierney and John Donowski. And I hear it from Donowski all the time. You know, you said, teaching is my base. Teaching is my foundation. And it's funny, I wrote that quote down after our podcast in 2015, and then I actually printed it out on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, and it's sitting above my desk right now.
That's great.
It's
something he told you.
What?
He told me that, Mike, when I started working for him right after college. He said, you're not a coach, you're a teacher first, and that's I tried to live that way. You know, it's one quote I always go by. It's not what you know. It's what your players have learned. You know, that's the thing I try and live by, because we can know everything, but it's our ability to teach it and for our players to learn it that makes the difference.
Well, and I piss some people off, man. When I'm speaking in public, I always say coaches lose games and players win games. You know, and you know, I'm in a lot of emerging areas speaking, and you know, they got beat 16-2, and the kids had 22 turnovers, and the next day they run hills for an hour. You know, and you're going like, did they get a lot better at throwing and catching, you know, running up and down those hills? You know, I mean, I've yet to meet a player that dropped a pass on purpose, you know. But anyway, with that being said, Hey, I can't wait to review some of this practice plan with you, because when we talked back in 2015, refresh my memory, Coach, 2013 was your first active season?
It was, yes.
Okay, yeah. And so, like, you're in your sixth year now or something like that, but at the time of this podcast, to try and keep them timeless, I already screwed up. Yeah, so you had an extremely young team, and when we talked in 2015, and you commented, you didn't beat it to death, man, but you commented a couple of times that, you know, some of the practice planning was modified or adjusted, as well it should be, to accommodate the younger nature of your team at that time. And a couple of those things stuck out to me. You know, your practices in 2015 were more often than not in the 90-minute mark, and I think you even commented not necessarily 90 minutes. Is that still the case, Joe?
Yeah, it is. You know, we found out that it's a long season, and while our excuse was we were so youthful then, we felt like as time progressed, we should just be more focused on what we're doing and do it in a less period of time. You know, the attention span for these kids is so short nowadays. I think they're pulled in so many different directions. They're used to having instant gratification. They can't pay attention for you know, an extended period of time. So to expect a kid to get, you know, really good production after that 90-minute mark in practice, I think it's kind of the law of diminishing returns. So
well, and
most of the time we're 90, maybe 2 hours, but that 2 hours includes stretching and some basic stick work and maybe some film.
Yeah, and the other thing I found interesting when we went through the practice plan, I want to review some of that, was, you know, you seem to have a good handle, much better handle than I do, man. You seem to have a really good handle, and you even commented in the podcast about times when you would slow it down. And I think in a very macro sense, one of the reasons that you ran a lot of the transition drills in the middle was for just that reason, because you may slow it down during the station work or the individual work, and you may come back and slow it down maybe at another point. Not to say that the practices aren't, I have a quote written down here, competitive, high rep, high intensity, which was a quote from you at the time. But you had a good balance of doing that. I seem to have a hard time. You know, I drank the transition Kool-Aid and the pace of practice Kool-Aid so deeply that I once had an assistant coach ask me a question. You know, and he said, well, when the guys do this, is this what you expect them to do? And I'm going, well, yeah. He said, well, I've coached with you 5 years. If I didn't know that, I'm thinking maybe they don't know that. You know, you need to slow down and explain to them the transcendental meditation, telepathic communication on my end was failing, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's for us, we're going with the thought of doing simple better. Honestly, that's what we're thinking about, is just how can we do the simple things as best we can. And if we do the simple things better than the other team, we're going to have a chance. So our practice is really structured around that. I mean, I'm frustrated because I know when I was a player, when I first got into coaching, practices were so intense and they were really challenging physically. Now, I can't look at our practice and say they're ultra intense and really are going to wear a guy out consistently. I think it's more of a teaching environment and allowing our kids to be at their best towards the end of the week. You know, it's a long season. Like I said, these kids are pulled in so many different directions. They have so much on their plate. We only get them for a short period of time. And I think all these guys are in great condition. You know, we all have strength coaches, and they work their tails off, and they're in peak physical shape. So we don't really need to get them into shape during practice. We need to make sure they execute, and they execute with confidence, and they understand the simple things necessary to be successful within our plan.
Wow, man, you studied for this interview, didn't you?
I pulled that out of the rabbit hat right there.
Yeah, I know you better than that, man. Yeah, so we came out of, in 2015, we came out of the infamous NCAA pre-practice with the stretching, and then you kind of went into a, you know, for lack of a better description, a fundamental period. Is that still where you go right out? I mean, we, you know, it's kind of split, man. I mean, if you'd ask me this
question.
Yeah, you
know, we switch it up a little bit. We do individual work a bunch, but we do some shock coaching, as we call it, right? And I got this from John Orson, who's now the assistant at Denver. He was an assistant for me for a bunch of years. And, you know, we sometimes we'll try and start practice with an ultra-competitive drill just to get the juices going, catch their attention, shock the system, and then we'll go into, you know, stick work or individual our individual period. And the practice structure will...
Yeah, I'm a big believer in coming out of stretching and or maybe even some shooting and then right into a, you know, depending on the size of the roster, you know, a really, really fast 3v2 for like 8 minutes just to get it going. And put
yeah, and the shot coaching
can
be anything,
there.
Right?
Yeah.
It can be anything that you find in your practice, in your, you know, drill suite that you say, that's a competitive drill. You can pull that out and you can use that right after stretching to get the energy going. I think the challenging thing is after you leave that segment and go into a teaching segment, you may have to shock the system again. You know, you may have to get their energy going.
Yeah, good point.
so that the peak of energy is not right after stretching. You want the peak of energy to be when they're competing, right? Or when you're going full field or doing the things that are not just the smallest versions of our game.
Well, and I think you told me one time that shock coaching often had a theme. Is that fair?
Yeah, it does, and it changes, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. Yeah,
it's honestly, it's based on what we need to get good at. You know, one week it might be ground ball play. Another week it might be, you know, one-on-ones. We could just do competitive one-on-ones. Or another week it might be a scrimmage to one, you know, just executing in a game setting. You know, and then we would do it for something, whether it's a conditioning or you know, something that the guys would enjoy. There's a reward and there's a consequence for the winner and the loser.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really crazy, man, getting to talk to the tremendous blessing opportunity I have to talk to coaches like you. I'm not patronizing you. If you knew me better, you would know I don't patronize. I'm really kind of an asshole. But at the end of the day, you know, coming out of the gates fast and then you find yourself never wanting to slow down. I mean, I've been in practices where I saw the next drill on my sheet. You know, it was supposed to be for like 8 minutes. I'm going, man, I don't even want to do that because I don't want to slow down the pace. And that's a really interesting balance. To that end, I wanted to share this with you. You know, over the last 2 years, you know, I think 2 years ago we saw maybe 70% of the coaches we talked to at all levels in interview come out and bang right into some kind of transition, you know, where previous to that, you know, they may start with full field passing or something, or rides and clears, which, you know, would bore me to death if we started practice with rides and clears. But now, after 2 years, believe it or not, we're seeing probably half the coaches we interviewed not start that way for the reason that you said. You know, they've gone back into a it's kind of like transition drills. You know, when I started this project, everybody would do them in progression, you know, and build. You know, now we don't see any of that hardly, but the same concept, you know. So, yeah, I think getting the guys, getting their pace up and getting their excitement level up and getting excited about practice and a competition element is great. And then when you have to slow down, that takes a little bit of talent. To your point, maybe the answer is going right back into a transition, fast-paced drill immediately following that.
Yeah, I you know, the thing I don't like to do is go full field for an extended period of time in the beginning and then drill it down into smaller parts. I prefer a build-up, but the shot coaching, I think you take that out, and you can do whatever you want in there, and then kind of reset your practice plan after that.
Yeah, and then from there, Coach, just to run quickly through here, you know, you if I remember right, we had a lot of transition stuff going on in the middle of practice, so to speak, and then we talked some at some point. I have a couple of questions, actually, about the ways you were running your 4v4 and even integrating in 5v5, which, you know, when I talked to you before, there weren't a lot of NCAA coaches working on 5v5 drills. And if they were, it was how to press the action in a substitution scenario, you know?
Yeah, you know, for us, it's we're looking for opportunities and different ways to put our guys in position to understand when to dodge, how to find space. But more so on the defensive end, how to communicate and figure out who's going to support the ball in a sliding position. You know, when it's obvious and it's easy, guys can do it. But it's that gray area, that unknown, and I think the more ways you can find to put those kids in positions like that where it's a little bit uncomfortable and they have to figure it out on their own, you know, they go back, hopefully they go back to the fundamentals that you've taught them. in the small part of sliding and recovering and playing on-ball defense, but at the end of the day, they've got to make a decision together. So a 5-on-5 scenario, a 4-on-4 scenario is a little bit different than what they're used to seeing, and it just puts them in a position of discomfort. That's not it's not normal, you know, and then hopefully you start to see some leadership and you start to see some guys figuring it out together. And I believe that those are some of the things that help build the defense to be really good 6-on-6. Because now guys are just figuring it out based on the fundamentals you teach them.
That's a really interesting comment to me, Coach. Let me follow it up. So you see a large portion of the value in the 5v5 more from the defensive side than the offensive side?
I do. Yeah, I mean, if you strip out the substitution game, we'll work on that stuff, the 5-on-5.
No, I get it. I get it. Yeah,
right.
I get it.
But honestly, for us, it's if you look at most goals that are scored, they're scored in scramble situations, right? Whether it's a slide, recover, and then dodge again, or if it's a ground ball that is a transition or kind of a slow break where it's a 5-on-5 in a small part of the field. It's a scramble situation where it's kind of chaotic, and you need those 5 or 6 guys who are now seeing a scenario that wasn't on the scouting report or what they didn't see on film. It's just a lacrosse play, right? It's just a dodger coming at you from a different angle with his teammates and you against your teammates. And now you've got to figure that out, how to stop them. So I think 5-on-5 puts you in those types of scenarios, right? Those scenarios that you can't script because there's more space. The field is a little bit kind of convoluted where, there's not a great set to be in 5-on-5. You just let these guys...
Hey, wait a second. My audience doesn't understand multi-syllable words like convoluted, man. I mean, you can't be like dropping that kind of vocabulary this early in the podcast.
Well, I think, and listen, I don't know what that word means, but it sounded pretty good.
It was awesome, man. Way over my head.
Well, come on. You're a professor, my friend. A professor,
yeah.
A world-renowned speaker, a couple of degrees, you know, millions of dollars in the bank from your corporate life. So you know what convoluted.
Master of all trades, master of none.
So I think, if it's a 5-on-5 drill, you can give the guys a little bit of structure to start, whether it's a 2-1-2 or a 2 up top, 2 on the crease, 1 behind, a circle or 1-3-1. You can give them some structure and then let them play, right? So that now you're looking at your offense, what their instincts are, and you're also now looking at the defense to work on their instincts and their reaction, their understanding of what the situation is.
So, Coach, how many times a week are you running 5v5 in season? I
know a couple of times a week, yeah. I mean, 2 or 3. And, we may build up 4-on-4 to 5-on-5 to 6-on-6. We may do 5-on-5 and then 6-on-6. It really depends on if there's something specific we want to work or if we want to just roll it out and let these guys react.
So, Coach, tell me how you start that. I mean, you have those guys go into a set, and I know,
yeah.
You know, we have
so,
coaches that start
like
every
said,
drill with a ground
really
ball. You're more of a guy. Yeah, you're more of a guy that starts a drill with a quick pass from a coach, right?
Yeah. So we would have the balls on either side, or top, or behind, whatever's easier for you, right? And then we usually do drills like this in a 2 or 3 ball setting because at least let's give those 10 guys that are in there enough reps. So we would say, okay, the first ball, you're in a 1-3-1, and we'll dodge from the wing. So entry pass to the wing, and go ahead and play, right? We may give them some structure where the crease guy can come to the pick, or he may fade, or he may exchange with the guy on the backside, or we may not, right? And then those guys would play to a shot, a turnover, whistle would blow. Then second ball, we would be in a Y drill, right, with ball going to X and 2 guys on the crease and 2 guys up top, top left and top right. So now you're working on a dodge behind, and you can have one of the guys on the crease roll off as an outlet behind the dodger, and you can tell the midfielders, the 3 guys who are left in that triangle, to rotate in your motion set. You know, one can cut, one can back out, or they can rotate in a 3-man triangle, just to give them some structure, right? And then you play. You know, if they don't draw a slide or score on that first dodge, then they move the ball and they play from there out of that kind of just chaotic, random set. right? Whatever happens after that first dodge, then they play from there. They play to a shot, save, turnover, goal, whistle blows, and then the third ball could be a dodge from up top. I mean, you can have the guys literally stacked in an I formation. Top center with the ball, entry pass, guy at the top of the box who's his midfielder who's going to mirror, and then two attackmen on the crease and one guy at X, right? And then that dodger goes, and there could be a pick on the ball, or he can just mirror what he does. The attackmen on the crease, one can C-cut, one can back out, and the guy at X can be an outlet. And then you play. You play from there. So that it's maybe a 10 or 12 second instance for each ball, but there is a obvious dodge with an obvious slide man, and then there's a less obvious dodge with a less obvious slide man. And that's where you really learn. You see what the instincts are offensively, and then defensively you see what your teamwork is and how you stop that secondary dodge.
Sorry, man, I'm writing. So, Coach, what happens when the D gets to the ball? Are they pick up a ground ball? Are you clearing that out to midfield, or are you just throwing the ball back out to a coach and starting the next rep?
Yeah, they'll try and clear it to midfield, but if it's, you know, I'm not going to let them get into a settled clear, right, because we want the field to move.
Okay.
We'll try and get them up and out because I know you like transition. We'll try and get them to throw the ball and, you know, break out and get upfield. But if not, if they have to roll back and throw it to the goalie, we may just blow it dead.
Right.
So.
No, man, I love it. I love it. I once got asked a question. I had a team, you know, great players, man. The one kid's goalie for the Outlaws, backup goalie there now, but, you know, they won that Dick's Tournament of Champions, you know, that national championship with, you know, a team from Georgia, pretty unheard of, actually, you know. And I was getting interviewed by the Inside Lacrosse afterwards on the video or whatever, and the guy said, "How often do you practice? How do you run all those plays?" I started laughing, and the team behind me erupted in laughter. We had two frickin' plays. You know, we had an inbounds play, and we had a 15-second play. Other than that, we ran our shooting drills on offense, you know, basically. I mean, you know, whether it would be, you know, a drive clear through to a C-cut, pass back, hit the C-cut guy, whatever it might be, you know. But then again, that was in the day and age before the, you know, the picks and the two-man games had made such a dramatic comeback, you know, years ago when we did that. Hey, that's an interesting question. Are you encouraging the guys to run two-man games or picks as part of that 5v5 because of the focus on the defense, are we more working on the not obvious slide? I love that term.
No, we are encouraging picks. I think picks give a lot of challenge, present a big challenge for the defense. But more importantly, we do a lot of picking in our offensive scheme. You know, we're not big enough, fast enough, strong enough to run past anybody. But so we have to utilize picks. And I think it's a really tough thing to do for the defense, and I think an even tougher thing to do in that five-man drill.
Yeah, and I don't have his name written. Yeah, I didn't write down his name. I should have. I'm a jerk. Do you have a coach that coached with one of your assistants? Didn't he coach with Bates at Drexel?
Yeah, Stephen Brundage. He's my offensive coordinator.
And so he got an interesting education in two-man games at that point, probably, huh?
Exactly, and that's really basically what we're doing. You know, Stephen helped him develop that offense, and we took it. So.
Cool. We talked last time about the move into the full field, and you talked about the rise and clears to a bit. Actually, I wrote an article for Latch Power about the concepts on the integrating the faceoffs into the full field, where you either play to a possession, play to a shot, play to a full sub. I added one for you there, play to one, you know, and mix those four things up and the reps of your integrating face-off work and wing play and transition off face-off, whatever it is, into that full field work. I was so impressed with your comments there.
I like it.
So now we're in full field, and then, oh, no, we did man up, man down before that, didn't we? You didn't do it at the end. You integrated it in before that, if I'm right?
Yeah, we switch it up, Mike. Honestly, I can't say I'm true to doing it at the end or the middle. If we suck at it, we're going to do it in the middle or the beginning because we're convinced that the guys don't pay attention at the end. If we're good at it, we'll keep it at the end. You know, I think it's a good thing to do for that shot coaching phase sometimes. You know, if it's the end of your week, right, and you've already taught what you're going to put in, man up, man down, then just start to practice with that and make it competitive. You know, but the thing we do a lot more of now is a lot of full field man up, man down, because I think that is a lost, it's a lost thing in coaching is the full field man up, man down, riding and clearing within that. That's something that, you know, full field face off, all those little plays in one goal games make such a difference.
Interesting. So obviously, one option there is to start that with a face-off, a man-up or a man-down face-off.
Yep, man-up or man-down face-off, or just start with, full-field man-up, man-down. So you got a team playing man-up against a defense, and then there's guys on the other end of the field, like you're scrimmaging, and guys in the box. You know, the hardest
thing
to do.
But
to
start that drill, you might give it to the defense and say, okay, you're man-down now, you got to clear.
Yeah, or I may say, okay, offense, get it around, don't shoot until the one rotation, and then take a shot on the goal that the goalie's going to save, you know.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Just so it's not scripted, and they got to react, you know. They got to react, and they got to figure it out.
Interesting. You have a couple of set clears or concepts that you run out of that, Coach?
We have a man down clear, and basically we just take our pole, and he flies to the midline and then makes a right or a left-hand turn to the box and runs off the field. When he gets to the midline, we have a short stick midi who's there balancing up. He sprints down, and now you have two short sticks on that end of the field, and they hunt the ball.
Right.
The three defensemen, they just break opposite of where the ball is, about 5 to 8 yards apart, and they look for open space as wide as they can. The goalie's job, whoever who has the ball, their job is to try and find those short sticks. Now, the trick is when that pole comes off the field, the attackman coming on for him goes parallel to the middle, to the sideline and in the alleyway. So if you throw the ball to one of those short sticks, their first outlet is down the field at the box, but down the sideline, right? So because most defensemen, if they're guarding that midfielder who's balancing up, they're not going to go run with that long stick midi who's by the who's running to the box. They're going to stay at the midline. And now if your midfielder who ran over the midline gets the ball and then attackman now comes on the field, there is a chance you can get a 4-on-3, or at least you have an offensive player catching the ball in enough space that he can run away from pressure and kill the clock.
And for lack of a better description but somewhat of a metaphor, it's like that metaphor, three syllables, Coach, metaphor. Yeah, if you're working that ball up on the side with the two shorties, you know, you'll oftentimes get that little loop pass to the attackman. Now we're off to the circus, you know?
Yep. Yep.
Very cool. How long you run that full field segment, Coach?
10 or 15 minutes.
Okay. Does that take us to 90 minutes in practice already?
Yeah, probably give or take. You know, we'll do a little scrimmage to one. We don't scrimmage very long. We'll scrimmage more in, you know, if we're doing a lot of teaching and it's a teaching practice, we'll scrimmage maybe for 10 or 15 minutes, but then when we do scrimmage, we'll make sure it's on a specific day and scrimmage for an extended period of time and won't do a lot of drill work, if that makes sense. So we'll strip out maybe 45 minutes of drills and scrimmage for 45 minutes. That's just the way we like to do it. We like to get all of our pieces in and then let the guys play, as opposed to scrimmaging, stopping the scrimmage, teaching. Let's get the teaching done. We'll film the scrimmage, and then we will teach like it's a game, like we're reacting to a game.
Right. I love that idea. Yeah, sometimes I get so anal about my practice plans, you know. I'm afraid to vary. You know, one of the ideas, you know, that I try and do is, you know, if we're going to run 10v10, you know, we may want to do it twice during the practice. you know, early and late, or maybe just with another drill integrated in between, then right back into it. As a way of trying to get the kids to play when they're, what's the right word? Oh, you had a better word than I do. Not obvious situation, you know?
Yeah. I didn't have a word. That's why I called, but not obvious.
Well, I think that's great, you know, and I love working on the 5v5, you know, especially if you're playing teams that will go open set, or, you know, it seems like the umbrella set has made such a comeback, huh? Go on the umbrella set, and, you know, even if they're clearing the coma guy, the guy that would normally make a coma slide out, you know, if the ball was coming from the wing or behind, and, you know, the guys are all looking at each other going, okay, whose slide is it? In a 5v5, that's a lot more challenging scenario than it would be in a 6v6 if you got them all kind of sagged into the hub, so to speak.
Yeah.
I never thought of that drill as a an opportunity to really focus on the defense. I love it. I love it.
I'm glad you like it, Mike.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why you're Coach of the Year, and I'm a fat guy behind a desk in Atlanta. I mean, it's just that simple. Just a wise man that knows his own place, you know. I mean, I understand. I understand. Coach, anything you've brought in as a new drill or introduced last year that the kids really loved? I mean, I know the kids. See, when you're 61, I don't mean to demean anybody, but a 25-year-old or a 35-year-old is a kid to me. The young men. That's one thing Lars Tiffany always does, huh? He always refers to them as young men. The
young men in this program, yeah.
Yeah, which is another reason that he's a head coach and I'm in Atlanta behind a desk. But I know they hooted and hollered every time you ran the cone of silence. I think you mentioned to me before. Is there another drill that really lights them up emotionally?
You know, we stole this one from Albany. I think Coach Stanowski does this as well. We did it with Team USA. We just play full field. We'll put a bunch of balls in the goal, in both goals, and then whether it's a shot out of bounds, whether it's a goal, whether it's a save, the ball's immediately going back up the field, right? So if you score a goal, great. Now you're just going to pretend the goalie made the save. He's going to get one out of the goal, and we're going to play transition the other way. So now, and if you shoot the ball wide, doesn't matter. We're not running it out. Goalie's picking up the ground ball, a ball from the goal, and he's pitching it out and playing full field the other way. So now you can go and you can sub and do all those things, but the thought is you're trying to create transition really quick, teaching your offensive players how to get in the hole, and then play from there. And then there's consequence to missing the goal. There's consequence to hitting the goalie. He saves it. There's also a reward for scoring a goal is you get to run as fast as you can in the hole and play defense.
Oh, my gosh. I was so lazy as a college player in practice. I would have never made it with you. I would have never made it.
It's a fun drill because, you know, you get a bunch of transition situations from different angles. So that's one we really like to do. And the goalies love it because there's no consequence for them either. You know, ball goes in the goal. We can't yell at them because they're getting one right from there and they're throwing it out.
Well, so. And I think if you're a youth coach listening to this or a JV coach or an emerging program, even at the high school level, if you've got 22 guys at practice, you know, pull the cages up and run it with two attack and two defensemen. You know, if you've only got 22 kids at practice, and you still get the conditioning element as well as the recognition factor of the not obvious scenarios that are occurring all the time by design.
Or less obvious scenarios.
Or less obvious. Oh, man, now you're really messing me up. I get a great drill from Coach Purdy. At Adelphi.
Gordo?
Yeah. Well, the thing that is, one of the things that's unique about Coach Purdy is, you know, he had a long tenure as a high school coach. I mean, there's not too many NCAA coaches that were successful high school coaches for more than a cup of coffee. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, the nature of your beast is you kind of get the volunteer, and then you move it, or a grad assistant, and then you kind of go into an assistant, and you work your way up the experience chain. Almost an apprentice program at the college level, coaching lacrosse. But there's not that many high school guys. So he's a favorite of ours because he was, you know, long time successful. I think like 10 years or something, coached high school ball and was very successful. But he has a drill he calls 15 balls of transition, and he uses it to close practice. He'll just take 15 balls, which incidentally is my new product idea. You remember those old newspaper sacks when kids used to deliver newspapers? They would wear over their shoulder the canvas bag. Yeah, I'm going to make those. Actually, I've already started this idea in progress. Make those for coaches to carry balls in practice. So you're not stuffing them in your sweatshirt, and you can just reach down with either hand, you know, and you've got them in a bag slung over your shoulder. And do them for the high school teams and put their logo on it and stuff like that is one of the things I think I'm going to do. But anyway, after like six or seven balls, he makes the middies play attack and the attack plays middies because kids are obviously gassed. They're out there for 15 balls, no subs.
Oh, my God.
Or it might be, you know, if you got a smaller roster, it might be 10 guys, you know. And I've had a couple of D3 coaches contact me, you know, that are running that drill. Good coaches, too. And you could heave it into the far corner and make them really run. You could roll it into a crowd of three or four guys and make it a true 3v2 scramble for a GB or whatever. The attackmen, they thought that drill was the greatest thing since sliced bread until you said they had to play midi. You know, which was so good for a myriad of reasons, not the least of which was watching your attackmen suffer running up and down the field, you know.
Yeah.
Now, your boy, Scott Marr at Albany, he would never run that drill because he's very prejudiced about attackmen. But
he's got to protect those guys. I would protect them, too.
Well, I'm just saying that, the guys he's got now, I would put them in a case and never let them on the field until the game.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, bringing in Nanichoke. I mean, I got to see him live a number of times, you know, when I was out visiting Red at IMG. But anyway, that was a great drill, too, just for flying up and down the field. Anything new you've tried, Coach, that either worked or didn't work as a drill? I always love hearing coaches tell me about drills they tried that they just couldn't, the team just didn't get the hang of them, or maybe they weren't pitching them right.
We've been toying with some individual stuff, and some stuff has worked great, some stuff hasn't. I'm trying to think, I can't think off the top of my head which ones haven't really worked that well, but we're just trying to really break the game down to the smallest parts. I mean, today we had the guys jog up to 5-5, get locked up, and then the whistle blew, and then they play from there, you know. And we're just trying to work on one aspect of dodging, when you get locked up at 5-5, you know. And then we'll reverse it, be like Ace Ventura going backwards, and then, okay, dodge now to get to 5-5, you know. And just really working on the little details of each movement because, you know, we are young, and these guys need to understand what the technique is at each part of their dodge or their movement on this field.
So, Coach, do they carry the ball up to the 5-5, or do you have them jog up there and then hit them with a pass?
No, they carry it like they're dodging. They just jog, you know, so the defender can't push them off. The defender's in good posture, you know, the attackman's in good posture, but they just jog up there so they get there. And then once they get up to that spot, it's live, you know, and they're playing. And it's a one-on-one from that moment.
Yeah, that's a great idea too, man. Coach, what are you doing for rides and clears to keep it interesting? You're always so good at making sure that it's fun and interesting for the kids. You got any tips there? Our guys, that's one of the biggest questions I get on the site.
Yeah, it's we've stuck with what we call our jumbo clear. It's two men down, the goalie and the defenseman, and then really five guys up at that second level. We go midline, sideline, midi, far hash, and the top of the box opposite of the goalie. Defenseman is at the faceoff X, another midi at the top of the box and the hash mark, and then another midi, midline, sideline. That's our look, and based on pressure, we can bring that down, you know, to react to pressure at that first level. And we'll cut the ball side inside midi. So if the ball goes to the defenseman who's staying at the left side, then the midi who's at the hash mark will cut directly at him, and the midi who's on the sideline will stretch, and we'll try and find a seam in there. But if there's no pressure, it's a pretty easy clear to use. If there is a little pressure, then you just bring the guys down closer to the midline and make it more of a 34 look.
So the inside guy is really, depending on what side the ball is, that's really the hunter, so to speak.
Well, the inside guy, he's just a decoy, truthfully. If they leave him open, we'll throw him the ball, but we're forcing them to cover a guy in the middle of the field. It's a defenseman. So, you know, they're like, should we cover him, should we not? Most teams do cover him. And then you've got seven guys, they have six, so you're going to find an open man. If they don't cover that guy, we'll throw...
Yeah, my question was, the inside middie is the guy cutting to the ball. He's the hunter?
Yep, he's the hunter. Okay. Yeah, he'll hunt, yeah, he'll hunt that ball. You know, depending on pressure. If the pressure's late, then we can bring the guys on the midline, sideline, we can bring him down to the ball. But the basic way to do it is to stretch him, and if that middie who cuts to the ball is covered, then the guy who stretches down the sideline should be open.
Assuming they stay with the pole in the middle.
Yeah, if they stay with the pole in the middle, yeah. You know, they only have three guys on the other side of the field to cover people.
Right.
So.
I'm taking all these notes like shorthand as I'm talking to you, and then tomorrow morning I'll go back and read them, and I'll have to listen to you because I don't know what they mean, my own notes.
Well, it's hard to explain over the phone.
Believe it or not, my audience gets it. Yeah. The guys that are listening to you right now, they get it. They get it, and they're probably writing as feverishly as I am here now, too.
Good, because my team doesn't get it, so.
I doubt that, man. I doubt that. Hey, I want to talk about your camps and stuff before I let you go. I know you're a little bit pressed for time. Last question. I made a comment to you before we went on the air about how much I loved watching your teams play because, you know, what do you guys play Denver, twice a year? I mean, your young men just play with so much heart and desire. Is that something you're recruiting? Is that something you're developing? Is there things that you're doing in the fall or in the spring to give them that, what I would call, blue collar, never say die, always keep working work ethic? Or is that an observation that I'm making that you don't see?
Well, one, I appreciate that observation. That's the observation that we aim for. So thank you for recognizing that.
Because I watch a lot of lacrosse, Coach. I mean,
yeah, thanks for recognizing that. But that's, I mean, you, to answer your question about whether it's something we recruit and or develop, it's both, you know.
Yeah.
We look for kids who want to prove something, who have an edge, who understand that there's tremendous challenge in what we're going to do. This is not an easy place to play lacrosse for a number of reasons. You know, it's a great place to play for the right kid, but it's not easy. You know, it's right now it's getting a little chilly out. Our dome isn't up yet. We're going to travel a bunch. You know, you're in a different place. You know, it's not for the East Coast.
Wait a second. What do you mean the dome isn't up yet? The dome got to be up, man. It's almost Thanksgiving.
Nah, come on. Next week, next Monday they start. Which is fine. I mean, we'll have it up for 6 months, and it's you know, it's terrific. And but the kids we have don't complain about anything. You know, they really appreciate everything that they do have. And that's the trick in recruiting, is finding kids who aren't going to complain. Aren't going to complain that you're going to play Denver twice in a week. Aren't going to complain that the week before that you played Duke and you played Notre Dame and you played Providence and you played Villanova and Georgetown. And that's the things you want. You want to play those games, and you want kids to understand that there's failure in part of the process. And when kids complain about what they've done wrong or they failed, then we got a problem. So I think that's the culture we've built. I think our senior class and the kids who have come before us have held us to that standard, and that's why you see what you see when we play. You know, we're not going to get beaten down by, you know, getting our butts kicked on a given game or a given play. We're just going to make the next play. And it's been fun. It's been fun to be around this group or these groups because they're not the most talented, but they really play hard for each other and for this place, which is humbling.
Yeah, I guess I never put two and two together before, man. I mean, your average road game has to be, what, 3 hours away flight?
Yeah, I mean, if we go to the East Coast, it's about a two-hour flight. We go to Denver, it's 2 hours.
Okay.
That's really, I mean, maybe two and a half, depending on the wind. But, yeah, and we're in an airport a bunch. We're on planes a bunch, and that's helped us, you know, because the guys are around each other more, you know. That's not for everybody. You know, that is not for everybody. And we're up front with these kids when we decide to recruit them. Like, look, this is what you're signing up for. Yeah, it's a great culture, and kids love it when they get here. They really enjoy this place, and we develop them. But it ain't easy. And I don't want kids to want to come here because it's easy.
Well, and you know, the converse of that is also true. I mean, when I was coaching a high school team here on the south side of Atlanta, you know, the kids, you know, the traffic in Atlanta is like stupid, you know. And, you know, when we, every game we had to play a formidable opponent, you know, we were on the bus for an hour and a half. You know, a bus with a school bus with a governor on it at like 13 miles an hour, you know, getting passed by like wicked witches on bicycles, or sitting in traffic. But it turned out to be, I never recognized it, but it turned out to be a pretty cool advantage when teams came down here in the playoffs. You know, they just weren't used to being on the bus that long. When we were, you know, for us, it became second nature, you know, so. You know, maybe teams coming up there is a little bit more of a home field advantage for you, too. One that you've certainly taken advantage of, you know, based on the record.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it works for us so far. But what else you got, Lax Coach Mike? I've got to, I hear my assistant yelling at me that I've got to help her out with something, so.
Yeah, last question. If guys want to send their kids to see you in a camp or play for you in a camp, we talked off the air. There is a showcase event that coaches run there in the past. I believe the website for that was amplifylax.com. And if you're looking for information, they'll be there. Are you working with anybody else going around doing camps, or is the Golden Eagle thing, the travel team, pretty much taking up your time?
Yeah, that's what we do the most of. We have a couple of showcases out here. We do some prospect camps, but our website, Marquette Lacrosse, you know, the Marquette Lacrosse website is an area you can look, or the Amplify website is another one. But
well, if you have any questions, just shoot me an email, which, you know, obviously our listeners are not bashful about doing, and I will forward it on to Coach. And if you have a kid interested in being exposed to this great staff and this great program, you know, that would be the way to do it. Hey, Coach, stay on the air with me. Let me sign off. I'm so thankful for your time. I know it was something that you squeezed in for us, and we sure appreciate it. This is Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com. Hey, man, you got a tremendous responsibility teaching in the lives of these young people. Take it very seriously. Until next time, God bless everybody. Thanks, Coach.